Vous êtes sur Art District Radio et c'est l'heure de retrouver Luc Seabright dans Jazz Interview pour une rencontre en anglais avec un artiste de jazz. Passez un très bon moment sur Art District.
Hi everybody, my name is Luc Seabright and you're listening to our jazz interview program on Art District Radio. Today, I'm very lucky to have on the phone with me renowned drummer and percussionist, Bobby Sanabria. Hey Bobby, how's it going?
Great.
So Bobby, you hail from New York, but you are today calling from Paris, from the US Embassy specifically, because you're here to take part in an event that's part of the Paris New York Heritage Festival. It's a relatively new festival. It's third year, and it sort of aims to take a broad look at and pay tribute to the African American and Hispanic American arts in their many forms. Could you tell us? It's a relatively new festival, so I'm guessing some of our listeners won't have heard of this festival before. Could you tell us briefly about it and how you got involved?
Well, this is a production of Ben Levy, and I was brought here in conjunction with the United States Embassy to do some cultural outreach to our high school and to a junior high school here to talk about the connections that Latin music has to jazz, particularly from the Puerto Rican and Afro-Cuban experience in New York City, and me being a New Yorican, which is a child of Puerto Rican parents, and the fact that I've been able to have the privilege of performing with basically everybody that has been part of the development of this music is important for me as a representative of the culture from New York, and also Ben Levy, who is the producer of the festival, who asked me to be part of this along with my wife, Elena Martinez, who is a noted cultural anthropologist and folklorist. We happen to be the co-artistic directors of the Bronx Music Heritage Center. And to give you the short answer the long way around, Ben came into contact with us, and specifically we were recommended to him so that he could learn more about the history of the Puerto Rican community in relationship to hip-hop, jazz, and all things in between, salsa, et cetera. And we took him on a guided tour of the South Bronx, because the South Bronx culturally at one time had between 60 to 75 nightclubs. So it was a very vibrant music scene that at one time was firing on all cylinders with salsa and with jazz.
Yeah.
And many great jazz musicians lived in the South Bronx, like Herbie Hancock and Donald Byrd and others. So he knew nothing of that history. So that's how our relationship came about. And he invited us to come to be part of this Paris New York Festival. To specifically talk, we're going to be talking about the U.S. Army Regimental Band from the 369th Regiment, the Harlem Hellfighters, as they were known in World War I. They were the first band to come to France and expose French, Germans, British to African American culture and early jazz and ragtime.
Indeed, because obviously the 369th Regiment has sort of been slightly in the spotlight this year, in particular in France, since we've been celebrating the centennial of the arrival of James Rhys Europe and his regimental band in France and their introduction of jazz, or proto-jazz, you could call it, into Europe. But so, if I've understood correctly, so you're going to be talking about the 369th, and specifically about the contribution of Puerto Rican soldiers in the regiment, which...
Most, Definitely. Most people don't know that in, as part of the band, they were, there were 18 Afro-Puerto Rican musicians in the band. Amongst them was Rafael Hernandez, who played many instruments, but his function in the band was specifically to play trombone. And Rafael Hernandez, after the war, would become known as Puerto Rico's greatest composer and Latin America's most beloved composer. Unfortunately, you would, if you watch the 18-hour documentary on that Ken Burns did on jazz, you wouldn't get any of that information because none of that was mentioned. So every opportunity we get, we try to shed light on that because it's an important part of jazz history and Latin music history.
Yeah, and as you say, like not many people know, people sort of associate the 369th with people think that it was an exclusively African-American regiment, but there was indeed, as you mentioned, a contingent of Puerto Rican soldiers who had played an important role.
Right. Puerto Rico has a long history of, as well as Latin America in general, of what we call bandas municipales, which are municipal bands. These are bands primarily made of musicians of color, and many of them were in the military, and they were very well-trained musicians. And Rafael Escudero, who was a tuba player and was a member of James Reese Europe's Clef Club in Harlem, as far as we know, that's how he found out that they were well-trained musicians of color in Puerto Rico, and since in 1917, through the Jones Act in Congress in the United States, Puerto Ricans were made American citizens. It was very easy for him to conscript or draft these musicians and bring them over to the States to serve in the band and make history, basically. Only 40, the band at full string was 65 musicians, only 44 of them came to Europe, but all 18 Puerto Ricans were in that contingent.
Okay.
So the band was almost half Puerto Rican.
Wow, okay. So this education and sort of outreach in particular about, as is the case here, the Puerto Rican experience and the sort of importance of Puerto Rican music in the American musical landscape, that those initiatives towards education and outreach, that's a big part of the work you do in, I guess, in New York, but also around the world. I know, for example, that you teach at the Manhattan School of Music, you teach at the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music, and as you mentioned, you're also the co-artistic director of the Bronx Music Heritage Center. So could you tell us a bit more specifically about the work that you do on that front, and in particular with the Bronx Music Heritage Center and the different initiatives that it pushes forward?
Well, at the Manhattan School of Music, I teach the Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra there, and we've been fortunate because I've gotten that orchestra of students to get so good that they've been nominated twice for Grammys. And I do the same thing at the New School in their program for jazz and contemporary music. And most of the musicians you see that are young out there performing in top-level bands in New York City have come through me as musicians.
You must
so
be very proud.
I'm proud of the legacy that I've left as an educator. But in the Bronx Music Heritage Center, our mission is to get the rich cultural heritage of the Bronx musically out there so that people know about it, and also feature all of the music of the different cultures that exist in the Bronx. We're in a very exciting time period because before, where the Bronx was primarily Irish, particularly the South Bronx was Irish, Italian, some Germans, Puerto Ricans, and African Americans. Now we have this new wave of immigrants coming in from North Africa, the Middle East, Central and West Africa. We have people coming from India, a big Chinese migration, many different cultures from Slovenia, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's amazing. And all of these people bring with them their music and their culture. So new fusions of music are starting to occur as we speak right now in the South Bronx. For example, there's a the community known as the Garifuna, which are black Hondurans primarily. They exist in other parts of Central America, but they mostly come from Honduras. They are making a big impact musically in the South Bronx and fusing their native cultural heritage with jazz. So it's an exciting time period, and we're in at the vortex of that, myself and Elena.
So the South Bronx music scene is as vibrant as ever, do you think?
It never went away. It's always been vibrant. In fact, when I was a kid growing up in the South Bronx, that's what kept us alive. I mean, when I was a kid, Southside was the gospel of the masses, so to speak. There was no place where you could not hear the music. And while the Bronx was burning because of the malfeasance of the city, and the city went bankrupt, and unscrupulous landlords started burning the buildings for insurance money, what kept us alive and helped us to survive was the music, not only just salsa, but jazz and rhythm and blues, funk, et cetera, which is which I'll talk about today. And also I was talking about with the kids that I visited at this junior high school and this high school. So the Bronx, usually when people think about the Bronx, particularly the South Bronx, they think about two things, the fires and hip-hop.
Yeah.
And also, I've been told that the French use particularly in Paris, use the word Bronx, in other words, to say, hey, well, you know, what do you think, when things are going all awry and crazy, they go, hey, what do you think you are, in the Bronx? So my mission and Elena's mission is to make sure that we're not the butt end of a joke or a snarky comment. The culture of the Bronx, in fact, I must say, it's an amazing thing. Dr. Mark Mason, who's the head of African American Studies at Fordham University in the Bronx, has stated publicly that more forms of music have been nurtured in the South Bronx than in any other place in the United States. The only place that maybe comes close is Tremé in New Orleans.
Tremé, of course, yeah.
And a lot of people don't even know that because they don't know the history out of ignorance. And our job is to shed some light on that history. So maybe the next time I come back to Paris or France in general, people will be saying, instead of using the Bronx as the butt end of a joke, they'll be saying, wow, man, that symphony orchestra that we just heard, man, they sound like they're from the Bronx.
Yeah.
They got some soul.
Let's hope so. And so how exactly does the Heritage Center fit in there? What sort of initiatives do you organize? Do you organize events in, you presumably organize events in the South Bronx, musical events, but other types of events as well?
Right, well, basically, it's a small, I would say it's an art gallery space, so we use it as an art gallery. We always have rotating exhibits of local artists and exhibitions. We do everything. We've had panel discussions with New York Times best-selling authors, famous comedians, but primarily we do a lot of musical programming there, but it all is Bronx-related. We recently did a program of mariachi music from Mexico because we have a large, growing Mexican population in not only the South Bronx, but the Bronx in general. We've done concerts featuring Jewish music. We've done concerts because the history of the South Bronx, there were many temples, many Jews. I mean, it's funny because the Jewish community were the only ones that we went to. The African Americans and Puerto Ricans back in the day, especially in the Morrisania community, which became an extension in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s of Harlem. Mm. So, so anything that is part of the culture of the South Bronx, our mission is to represent it. We also have music classes, piano classes for beginners, intermediate, and advanced. We also have conga classes. We also have dance classes. All this in an art gallery space that maximum can hold between 80 to 100 people. Okay. But what's it's exciting now is that in 14 months, we'll have the Bronx Music Hall, which we've been recently meeting fervently for the last 2 years with architects, and it's being constructed right now. And that'll be part of a 350-apartment complex. 15% of those apartments will go to elderly musicians. And we'll have a 300-seat multi-use theater inside and an amphitheater outside. And this is all through the parent organization, the Women's Housing and Economic Development Wow. Corporation, which was founded 25 years ago by this incredibly famous lawyer, Nancy Beaverman, who's a legendary in terms of housing law and representing women's rights.
Wow.
So Nancy is our heroine, and she was the whole one that came up with the concept of the Bronx Music Heritage Center.
That's great news. So
everything that we're doing now in miniature, we'll be doing at a larger level in about 14 awesome. Months at the Bronx Music Hall. So I hope to see you, the people here at the embassy, and anybody else that comes to visit the Bronx.
Hopefully.
Grand opens.
It would be with great pleasure. You touched upon your personal experience growing up in the Bronx, and you're obviously established today as one of the leading figures working in the United States in Afro-Cuban, Afro-Caribbean jazz, Latin jazz. So could you tell us maybe a little bit more about that personal journey of yours through that music, how you came to love it, how you came to make it your own?
Well, I mean, I always say to people that you're a product of your environment. I mean, I was born in 1957, the year West Side Story premiered on Broadway. And at that time, the South Bronx was a paradise. It was a symbol of upward mobility for anybody that was working class. And then, unfortunately, the Cross Bronx Expressway and the Bruckner Expressway cut through the South Bronx like two pincers. And they were built by Robert Moses, who was this Svengali architect, combination architect, Svengali city planner, and who had started working under the LaGuardia administration, believe it or not, in the 1930s. He did some positive things, but one of the horrible things he did was destroy the South Bronx. Mm. And if you travel through New York City, all the highways were built by him, but except for the FDR Drive. But when he built the Cross Bronx Expressway and the Bruckner Expressway, he sealed the fate of the South Bronx, because to do that, the city claimed eminent domain, and basically 500,000 people had to move out of the South Bronx. If you had a house, it didn't matter. They said you got the city sent you a letter, you got 3 months to leave. They give you a minimum amount of money, even though your house might be worth a lot, even though your grandparents might have constructed the house 100 years ago or 50 years ago, whatever. If you lived in a tenement, you had to move. Anyway, those highways were basically done by the early 1960s. And what happened was there was a lot of factory work in the South Bronx. And all those people that had to move and all those factories had to leave as well. So the value banks devalued the area, and they did what they called redlining. So on a map, they would draw a whole red line around the area geographically that was the South Bronx. And if you were an owner of a tenement, some of these tenements were over 100 years old, and you obviously have to maintain it. So that's, hey, I want to go to the bank. I want a loan for a boiler. We're sorry, we can't give you the loan. You're in that area that's redlined. So some unscrupulous landlords, what they started to do was, okay, well, I can't maintain the building. I'm just going to burn it and collect the insurance money.
Mm.
So they pay a junkie $25, which is a lot of money. You go to the roof of the building, well, pour gasoline on it, and light it. Now people ask me, well, wow, what about the people living in the building? Well, what they would do is slip a piece of paper underneath the door and say, leave the building by 3 o'clock. So you see a lot of people across the street watching their own home being burned down.
And these were things you saw?
What, excuse me?
I mean, were you a witness to this, to what was going on in Brooklyn?
Of course, I see, yeah. I was lucky because I grew up in the projects. You couldn't burn down a project.
Yeah.
These are these big high-rises. But once I remember where I grew up on 681 Cortland Avenue on East 153rd Street, smoke was coming, and we lived on the 12th floor in Promontory. Smoke was coming in underneath the door. My sister Joanne starts screaming. I get a towel, put it on to block the seal of the door. We go into the farthest corner of the apartment where the bedroom was, open the windows, and we're like scared as all hell, etc. Half hour later, we hear pounding on the door. It's the New York City Fire Department. The guy, and he goes, anybody in there? Anybody in there? He goes, yeah. He goes, stay in the apartment. Somebody lit a mattress in the stairwell. Tried to burn the building out, smoke the building out. So that's the kind of life I was leading. But and then on top of that, it was the Vietnam War, and all these GIs were coming back, and they were all heroin addicts. So organized crime in East Harlem started flooding the South Bronx with heroin. So everything that could happen wrong was happening in the South Bronx at that time. But the thing that kept us alive was music. And also, if you're a child like me, I grew up in 57, I just turned 61, jazz was still a big part of mainstream culture in the United States.
Yeah.
We had TV shows like the Johnny Carson Tonight Show. They had a great jazz orchestra that Doc Simonson led. Merv Griffin had an incredible jazz combo playing there. David Frost had an incredible talk show, and he had an incredible big band led by Dr. Billy Taylor, the pianist. The Hollywood Palace featured jazz all the time. Ed Sullivan, the variety show on Sunday nights, that's how I saw people like Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Buddy Rich, the great drummer. It's not that I wasn't into the Beatles. Everybody was. I saw the Beatles when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Ed Sullivan, when they first came to the United States. But when I saw these great jazz orchestras and these great drummers improvising and saw how they were driving the bands, it was so exciting viscerally. That moved me more than seeing Ringo playing and just keeping a beat. So, and also, too, you have to realize at that time, all of the cartoons in the United States featured jazz.
Jazz, yeah.
From the Flintstones to Johnny Quest to Yogi Bear to the Jetsons, etc. So other cartoons like Courageous Cat. I mean, they were just, great music was just part of these cartoons. So there was no way that I could escape that. And then listening to salsa growing up at home in Puerto Rican, from Cuba, Puerto Rican folkloric music.
Yeah.
My father had an eclectic taste, so we listened to everything to Sergio Mendez, the Count, when Brazil 66, the Count Basie. And then hearing Cuban rumba in the park every night of the summer. Can you imagine, it's 10 o'clock at night, right? And you're hearing... I mean, that's what's happening in the South Bronx at the time. So it's not like somebody would call up the police and say, hey, there's a bunch of people, it's 10 o'clock at night, trying to get some sleep, and they're playing conga drums. It was like,
it was everywhere.
If the conga drums stopped, people would call up the police, hey, something's wrong. There's no conga drumming right now. Something must be wrong. Something must have happened.
Wow, yeah.
So that's the environment that I grew up in.
Okay.
And the drums spoke to me, and I've had a great professional career. And I'm an educated musician. I went to the Berklee College of Music. Actually, I was the first Puerto Rican musician at the Berklee College of Music, studying there in 1975.
Wow.
And 79, I got my Bachelor of Music degree. And then right afterwards, I started working with the great Mongo Santa Maria.
Of course.
The legendary conga player. And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
7 Grammy nominations as a band leader. But part of my mission has always been education. And I'm so glad that Nancy asked me and Elena to be part of this Bronx Music Heritage Center project and the Bronx Music Hall 5 years ago. So I always say that as a musician, as an artist, you have to get back to your community. And that I'm doing it in my home borough, New York, the Bronx, is really gratifying.
Bobby, it's...
That was the short answer.
I could go on like this for ages. It's really great to I mean, it's a real pleasure talking to you. Unfortunately, we don't have too long, so I want to give you a quick chance to just talk about your new album, which is coming out this year. You mentioned that you were born in 57, the year that West Side Story premiered, and... this year you're going to be releasing, actually this year in a month more or less, you're going to be releasing West Side Story Reimagined, which is a sort of Latin jazz reworking of the great score by Leonard Bernstein, who would have been 100 this year. Could you tell us quickly about that project?
Well, in my opinion, it's the greatest thing that I've done. My multiverse big band is 21 of the greatest musicians living on this planet. It's multi-generational, multiracial. There's women in the band, etc. And we recorded November 19th of last year at Dizzy's Cup Coca-Cola in New York City. This whole entire reworking that I've been working on for the last 3 years of the entire score of West Side Story, all with different Latin American rhythms. It's called West Side Story Reimagined. And the great thing about it is it's released July 20th, but the great thing about it is a double CD. And if you purchase a CD, most of the money goes to the Jazz Foundation of America's Puerto Rico Relief Fund to aid the musicians on the island who have no gigs. Many have lost their homes.
Of course.
Either still do or have apartments, can't pay their rent. And it's just devastating down there. They have no gigs. They many have lost their instruments.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win situation for everybody. You get this incredible music by, in my opinion, the greatest musician the United States has ever produced, Leonard Bernstein. And you get, and it's in keeping with his humanitarian spirit. So it's taken from the approach that where West Side Story was about the Puerto Rican community supposedly encroaching on the white working class community. Well, now the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of that white community that fled now want to reclaim the neighborhoods that we helped to rebuild and that conflict. So everything is reversed. And now, instead of those neighborhoods being just black and Puerto Rican, there's Dominicans, Haitians, Venezuelans, Colombians, I mean, it's all that in a bag of chips, as we would say, in the Bronx, and all that, all those rhythms, Cuba, etc., are all represented in this new reimagining, Brazilian rhythms, etc., so the whole, it's taking, as Jamie Bernstein said Leonard Bernstein's daughter, is taking West Side Story and re-ratcheting it up to the ultimate power, to that, that she said it's the most exciting reimagining of the music, revisiting of the music that she's ever heard in her lifetime. So we had the blessings of the Bernstein family, which is really, really, really a super cool thing.
It's a really exciting project. I really look forward to hearing it when it comes out. Do you know exactly what the release date is for the album?
Yeah, the release date is July 20th, and it's on the Jazz Heads label, and you can pre-order it now at Amazon.com.
Awesome.
So you get to see what I look like. There's a beautiful picture of me playing in the moment on the gig when we did it. You know what was amazing too was that Jamie Bernstein was there in the audience when we performed it.
Wow.
And she came up to me almost with tears in her eyes when she introduced herself to me, saying my father would have been flabbergasted if he would have heard this. And if anybody's in New York, August 10th, we'll be performing it live at Lincoln Center Art of Doors. And next year, if you happen to be in Washington, D.C., on January 18th, we'll be performing it live at the Kennedy Center.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much, Bobby. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I personally have learned a lot about the urban history of the South Bronx. I hope some of our listeners have too. Thanks so much for being here. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for the privilege.
Once again, that was Bobby Sanabria, the percussionist and drummer. As you heard, there's an album coming out in July, which is a reworking of the score by Leonard Bernstein, West Side Story. It's called West Side Story Reimagined. Thanks so much. That was Bobby Sanabria. I'm Luke Seabright, and that was our jazz interview program for our district radio. Thanks.
C'était Jazz Interview avec Luke Seabright. Retrouvez tous nos podcasts sur notre site internet artdistrict-radio.com. Très belle journée, à notre écoute.